Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com, and I'm sitting here with my friend John.
Hi, Bobby.
And John is on Zoom because we're good citizens and following the social distancing rule. Well, we tend to be good citizens anyway. So I'm up in Washington State today. I came up here for the summer, and but I've got a story for you that I think will be interesting. You know how we, all in our lives, we have these things that are significant emotional events. And I've had some, and you know, from a professional standpoint, I've had some very big, significant emotional events. And this is one that's a very positive one, because I've had some that were negative. But if you remember in this story called Fire Bitch, part of that story is where I had a guy that I had to demob off of a fire. For those of you not in the fire world, that means you had to kick him off the fire, send him home, for insubordination. And he's the one that I thought was actually going to beat me up. I was really physically afraid that I was going to get hit because he was so mad at me. This is on the same fire, and this is actually the day after that. And so it's kind of interesting because here's a story where on one day it was a dark, dark day for me. Here I thought I was going to get beaten up, and I had a guy yelling at me because he thought I was, you know, wrong to do what I was doing. Even though I was being directed to do this and I knew I could do it safely, he was angry at me. And so I went from that to, and so the story I'm going to tell you today is the next day. And so let me tell you what happened at the end of the day when that guy, you know, the day I thought I was going to get beaten up. We did a controlled burnout. A burnout operation is where you're cutting, instead of cutting line right next to the fire, you pull back a little bit and you burn out from your new line, whether it's a road, whether it's a line you put in, a hand line or a dozer line. And you burn out that fuel between your control line and the main fire. And it's done every day on fires. That's how you fight fires. You can't go direct right on the fire's edge all the time. It's not safe. It's not comfortable. It's very difficult. So we do burnouts all the time. And so in the story Fire Bitch, I described doing the burnout that the guy didn't think we should do, and it was a successful burnout. Well, at the end of that day, the ops chief came to find me, and he describes the burnout that we need to do the following day. Now, this ops chief is someone that I had worked with regularly over the few years that I was working in California. He was a guy who didn't know me from Adam to start with, but I was on a fire with him, and I did some good work and picked up some line, fire line, that kept getting, they kept losing it the prior days. And he told me to go in there and try to see if I couldn't catch that fire line. And I did. And so then he was all impressed, and I had some words with him that weren't positive because I caught this fire, this line for you. When you get a good assignment, don't leave me behind here holding on. You know, firefighters don't want to be the ones left holding the line. They want to be forward. They want to go forward in the fire and be actively firefighting, not holding line that's being burned out. So we had a little bit of a tiff, and he was really great, and he didn't hold me back after I pressed him. But now, fast forward to this fire, we had been burning out for several days. The fire had come off of the National Forest where it was steep and rocky and difficult to get line in, and now the fire is down off the National Forest into flatter ground, still lots of trees, and there are communities. There's a small community, a couple hundred homes, and we had been burning out around the houses for a couple days. And it was kind of hairy burning. It was sketchy because we didn't have the wind in our favor. You know, when you do burnouts, you want to have the wind in your favor, so it's not wanting to cross your lines. And in the case of this first couple of days of burning out, it was very tough, and we were there was a little luck involved in holding on to the fire line and saving those houses. Well, then the next day is the burnout where the guy didn't think we should, and you know, I kicked him off the fire, and now it's the end of that day, and the ops chief comes to me and says, you know, tomorrow we're going to continue the burnout down the highway, and we're just going to pull back to the highway because we don't have the resources needed to go direct. So in other words, in order to go direct, it would have taken maybe a week or two to get the fire line in, and we didn't have the time because the fire was coming off the mountain. And so the next good line we were going to have was this two-lane highway. He said, it's a nine-mile burnout I got planned. He said, we've got homes along the highway. We have a campground along the highway. And the fuels are pretty thick in there. It was pinyon and juniper. And he said, we want to burn out this 9 miles tomorrow. He said, I've got 25 fire engines. That's five strike teams of engines. I've got, I don't remember how many hand crews. There were half a dozen or more hand crews. That's 20 people per hand crew. We've got a lighting crew. That'd be like a dozen folks just burning out, just using drip torches and different firing devices to burn off to get that depth of line off the highway. And he says, we got availability for air tankers. Those are the, but some folks might think of as slurry bombers. Those are the air tankers that come in and drop the retardant on the fire to help augment your firefighting efforts. I was like, wow, that's going to be a big operation. That's very cool. I said, so who's going to do it? And he says, well, you are if you want to. And I was like, yeah, you bet I want to. Now, this was a big deal. I had never done a 9 mile burnout. I had never done a 9 mile burnout with 25 fire engines, hundreds, probably a couple hundred fire crews, or a couple hundred firefighters on fire crews, and all the other bells and whistles that go along with this. I said, yeah, you bet, I'm up for it. And so that was a big deal. That was late in the day. And so now I had the morning to kind of figure out my plan, how we were going to actually implement this. And so I came up with this idea that just like we call it building progressive handline, where you're only going as fast as the person in the back tells you that the line is good. And that's how we were going to do this burnout. I had 25 engines spread out. Now you can imagine if you have 25 engines spread out, say 30, 40 yards apart and going really slowly forward. And the burners are on the side of the highway burning the road, burning off the road. Now, one of those burners might be a half a mile in off the road. One of the burners might be, you know, a quarter mile in, and you've got multiple burners. And it's very dangerous if they're not coordinating things right. So that's a big part of it, to make sure that the burners have their plan. And I want engines up at the front where the burners are igniting, but I need engines in the back to make sure that nothing's going to cross the road behind me. So we can't go any faster burning until those last few engines in the back say, yeah, we're good, and they can keep bumping forward, we call it. So that was the plan. Now, for the last couple weeks on this fire, I had been working with Cal Fire firefighters, because in California they're the major player, and I was working with a couple of battalion chiefs who were there as division supervisors, and these guys, they were great guys, they were great firefighters, but they were crusty as hell. I mean, they were always trying to tell me what I should be doing. Now, if you've listened to many of my stories, I don't react well to old guys telling me what I should do. Now, if they say, hey, you know, you have any questions, or if you want any input, let me know, I'd be happy to help. No, it was never anything like that. It was, you know what you need to be doing here? You know, I'll tell you what you're not got to do. And so over the course of the few weeks that I've been working with these guys, they were always, I'll tell you what you need to do. Here's what your plan is for tomorrow. And I would look at them in their crusty exterior, their unshaven face, their hair is kind of, you know, they've been on a fire for a week. They don't care what they look like. But they got this crusty exterior, and they are cussing about everything, and, oh, damn this, and they're going to tell me what I should be doing. Now, at that time, I'm in my 40s. I looked younger, and like, who the hell is this woman that, you know, and so they were always going to tell me what to do. So that had been going on for a couple weeks, and I got along with them great because I would just tell them to F off. You know, I really would, because that was the only way I could get them to shut up and quit telling me what I need to do. What you need to do is, it's like, I'll tell you what I need to do when I take out your kneecaps or something. But, I mean, we got along. We really did get along great. But, so one of them comes up to me when he finds out I'm doing this burnout. He says, hey, if you need any help, let me know, because I can come up there and give you a hand. And I said, oh, I really do need a hand. I said, you know, we're going to be bumping along trying to get this done in one day. And so what I would really be helpful is if you followed behind my last engines and bring some of your crews and engines behind mine, because we're going to be spread out for, you know, we're going to be spread out for however, I don't know, half a mile or more, maybe longer, because as you get towards the end of the line, those engines will probably spread out even more. Because they're fighting fire along the road and keeping it from crossing the road and all that sort of thing. And I got hand crews walking on the unburned side of the road, making sure we don't get any spot fires across there. So they're in the green side, we call it, the green side of the line that we don't want any fire. And they're walking through, gritting through there as we go, keeping an eye on, make sure there's no spot fires. So I tell this crusty Cal Fire battalion chief, I say, you know, I could use a hand. Keep an eye on the back of the line. Bump some of your folks behind mine and keep an eye to make sure it's cool enough that we're not leaving any danger behind us, because that could be really bad if the fire jumped and we didn't see it. Well, that's not what he wanted to hear. He says, God damn it, I'm not going to be your, he says, your drag shovel. And drag shovel meaning the last person in a line cutting line. You know, he took that as an insult that I was offering him to be the drag shovel. Now I'm not doing that. You know, if you want help, I'll come up and help you run the burnout. I looked at him like, no, I don't need any help running the burnout. I got a plan. If you want to help, it's at the back of the line. And so that was... he ended up doing it. He ended up helping out that way, like I asked him to. But he wanted to be up front where the fire was going good. Of course, that's where firefighters want to be. So over the course of the day, we are bumping along, burning out. Everything is going good. We had an air tanker come in a couple times, cool things down for us. We picked up any little spots that were crossing the road, and all of the engines were fully engaged. If you remember, if you listen to Fire Bitch, that story, the strike team that from the strike team leader that I kicked off the fire, I put them in the very front. I kept the strike team of engines. I just sent their supervisor home, and their unit sent me a new supervisor for the engines, a new strike team leader. I had them in the front of the line because I wanted them to see that you could do burning out under tough conditions and be successful. So they were going to go home and tell everybody what a great, excellent assignment they had when their strike team leader got sent home. That was part of it too, you know. I had some ulterior motives there. But, so we end up lighting and off we go, and everything is going well. Now, I was pretty new in California at that time, and our local agency administrator for the federal lands where we were working, and my boss, unbeknownst to me, were driving up from the city to see how things were going. They heard this was going to be a big burnout show. And so they wanted to come and see, and they wanted to kind of watch how things were going. So I was in the midst of trying to make sure everything is good, and we're slowing down. It's getting to be towards the end of the day. We got a lot of fire spread out on the ground. I think at this point we had like 7 or 8 miles of fire on the ground on this road. That's a big deal. Unbeknownst to me, my boss and his boss, the administrator, are in the area, and they're in their truck listening to the radio. So if anyone has ever witnessed a fire whirl, and firefighters, wildland firefighters, see them often. They're not unusual, different sizes. For those of you who aren't wildland firefighters, if you imagine a dust devil or tornado, it gets kind of formed the same way. You get some instability in the atmosphere. You have heat wanting to rise, and it rises up quickly. And through the Coriolis effect, it starts to spin, and it just feeds. Then it starts sucking the hot air on the ground up into the funnel, and you have this fire whirl. Now, the difference between a dust devil and a fire whirl is a fire whirl's got fire inside it. It's all on fire. So it's pulling up unburned gases, unburned particles, and it's igniting within the little dust devil or small tornado. Now, some of these fire whirls can be small. Some of them can be quite large. This fire whirl was probably, I don't know, 200, 300 feet tall. It was a pretty good size one. Now, I'm on the road, keeping an eye on everything up towards the front, and we had stopped burning because we were trying to hold on to everything we had. We didn't want to lose anything at this point. We'd been picking up all the little spot fires we had been getting on the road. I told the burners to stop burning. Let's let everything cool down before we keep going. And I see a fire whirl off in the distance in the black. So within the fire, things are dying down, but there's still a tremendous amount of heat in there, meaning you couldn't walk through it. You know, the trees are still burning. There's still logs burning. There's still a lot of heat in this area, and that's what starts the fire whirl. And people start yelling, fire whirl, you know, and it's coming towards us. So imagine a little tornado that's on fire and it's coming your direction. I get on the radio and say, everybody out of the way, engines, you know, towards the back, back up, engines in the front, pull forward, hand crews, get down out of the green, you know, get out of that unburned fuel and get on the road and get out of the way. So people are starting to do that. But when the fire whirl got to the road and then crossed the road, it kind of, like when it crosses the road, it doesn't have the heat and the fuel, you know, for that 30-foot section of asphalt and gravel and that sort of thing. And the fire kind of goes out in it, but it's still like a whirlwind. It's still like a dust devil. As soon as it crossed the road into the green fuel, into the unburned fuel, all that heat that was within it just bursts into flames. All of that unburned fuel on the other side of the road burst into flames, and now it's feeding the fire whirl, and it starts another fire on the other side of the road. The hand crews, God bless them, they were so intent on getting this fire out, they were running towards the fire whirl. And I'm on the radio, everybody back, everybody out of there. Get down, you know, the hand crews. I was really paranoid, like they were going to throw dirt from their shovel to put out this fire whirl. I mean, they were wanting to put the fire out, but this wasn't the time yet. So over the course of, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, the fire whirl finally goes down, dissipates, but now we got a fire on the wrong side of the road. And this is a big fire. You know, this is, at this point, it's probably 5 acres, 10 acres, and we had all the resources there. I had 25 engines. I had all those hand crews. And they start fighting it just like any fire. We had the engines on one side putting hose lays up the hill in the brush, and the hand crews cutting line. And we stopped the fire at 20 acres. That was a big deal. In the midst of all this, if you remember, the local administrators show up, my boss show up. Hey, it sounds really good. You know, they want to talk. And I'm like, I have no time. I can't talk, you know. It's too busy. And they keep asking me questions. It was just too much to deal with talking to the administrator, you know, while you're in active firefight. It seems funny to say, of course, that was too busy. But so they said, no problem, you know. And they went on to the incident command post to talk to the incident commander. And we ended up picking up that slop over, and we finished that burnout. Now, over the course of that burnout, I mentioned how many miles we went. We also saved multiples of homes because we had to burn. You know, there's homes set back maybe 100 yards off the road, the highway, you know. Well, we had to burn around those houses. We had to burn around outbuildings. You can't just go down the highway because you got homes inside there. So it took a lot of finesse while we were doing the burning and that sort of thing. So that was very successful. The federal government did get sued by one of the landowners, the homeowners, because although we saved his house, we burned up the trees and we ruined his view. And so... So to compensate, I went back and burned the house down, you know. So, no, I'm just joking. No, I found out about this, you know, probably 6 months later, and it was a lawsuit that was settled and or dropped because there was no, we were trying to fight a fire, put the fire out, you know, and he was upset because we ruined his view.
But you saved his house.
We saved his house, yeah, but that's the epitome of ungrateful, but... Anyway, that aside, it was a very successful assignment. But it's interesting because, like many things in life, you know, some of the best things, like in firefighting, people ask, "What's the best fire you've ever been on?" Well, that's kind of a dumb question in my mind because some of the best fires I've been on have been some of the worst. You know, so from a professional standpoint, you might have performed outstanding because you were called upon, because you were challenged, and that's really good, but maybe at the same time people could have died and houses lost, and so it's a horrible fire, but maybe you performed well, so that makes it, you know, makes it positive. So there's all that sort of thing, and this is one of those fires for me that I had been challenged the day before by a guy who I thought he was an experienced firefighter. He had been a hotshot soup. And I thought he was going to hit me because he didn't think we should be burning out this other area. And that area was nothing compared to what we were doing on this next day. So this was a significant professional event for me in my career. You know, sometimes you think you know what you're doing and people say you know what you're doing. But there's always this little doubt in your head, you know. And for me anyway, and this was one of those fires, was like, yeah, damn it, I know what I'm doing. You know, I didn't need the Cal Fire crusty battalion chiefs to tell me what I should be doing from one day to the next. And I have justification to feel like I do know my job. And anyway, that was one of what came out of this incident for me. And the fact that I had this history with the ops chief. So my first connection with this ops chief was on that fire where I picked up the fire where they were, kept losing it day after day with the team, the division soups from the team. And then they brought me in just because I showed up and they said, okay, you try catching this part of the fire. And I did. So he knew I could get things done. Then I kind of stuck my finger in his chest and told him, you better make sure you take care of me, was what I was telling, and send me to the next, don't leave me back holding, being the drag shovel, basically. And I kind of got in his face a little bit. I was kind of a bitch, you know, I was tough. And so So he knew I could get stuff done. Then the next time I'm with him, I'm kicking a guy off the fire for insubordination, and I'm doing a bunch of burning out, and he'd seen all the burning out I'd done days prior to that. And so it led to me getting this great assignment, and we do big burnouts now all the time. But back then, that was the biggest one I'd ever been involved in. I think that's kind of the essence of the story there. I think we build, you know, our professional careers are built block by block. You know, we build this foundation, you know, we take training and we get experience, and that's our foundation. And then we get these experiences where you gain something every time, you know, every fire you go on for me, or every incident, whether it's a hurricane or a landslide or you know, FDNY helping them at the Trade Center. Every one of those is a block, you know, that you build in your career. You know, you're building this structure. And so this was one of those significant blocks for me. And it's not just the know-how to do the burnout, because lots of people could have done the burnout. If I wasn't there, someone else would have done it, and they would have been successful too. But for me, because of these things that happened before, because of my interactions with the operations section chief, because of my being, whether it's obstinate, stubborn, strong, whatever, assertive, whatever word you want to use, it led me to getting that assignment. And so those were all part of the blocks that helped build my career, I think. John, you got anything you want to add?
No, that was a great story. Really good.
Well, I hope everyone else enjoyed it. For you crusty old battalion chiefs out there, no offense. I had great affection for those characters on that fire, and I worked with them a lot the time I was in California. You hear me calling guys or firefighters in general knuckleheads, you know. I always say that term of it with endearment and affection. And these guys that I was working with from Cal Fire, they were great firefighters. They just didn't want to play second fiddle to this young woman. You know, that's what it was. And so I have great memories of those folks. And so I'm going to wrap it up. I hope everyone's staying safe. I hope everyone's following the direction from your local public health folks. And I hope this blog maybe gives you a little bit of a distraction and takes the edge off a little bit, and you enjoy listening. And with that, I will sign off and wish you all well. See you next week.